Parshas Korah. Oh, okay. So, I will not tell you the city that I was in this week, but I will tell you that I met with somebody not like Korah. Okay? Because I don't think he challenged God the way Korah challenged Moshe and God. I was with a person who had a great deal of money and was so unhappy with so many things. The people who brought me to the city asked me to just speak to him. And you know, I had nothing to say. But I did say this one thing. And it so connects to Korah. The man had a huge dining room table. I mentioned here before that I found in the writings of Rav Gamliel HaKohen that the French Jews from a different century would be buried in their dining room tables. I mentioned here, you may have heard it elsewhere, the man had a huge dining room table. He only had like 5 or 6 kids. I said, "What? Who sits here?" He said, "It's filled every Shabbos." So I told him this idea, because I really could not satisfy anything he told me about the city. I don't want to give anything away. He's just unhappy, negative, criticism. The glass is half full, and really, to a certain extent, that's the story that we're reading about Korach. Korach, we know, was a wealthy man. I don't know if it was millions or billions or thousands, whatever it was, whatever the currency was at that time, he had it all. And we all would like that, and I wish that wealth on all of us. We should all have the wealth and the financial security that we like to have. At the same time, I think one of the lessons from the parsha is that it's who you are inside which really makes a big difference. And the externals, if you take them and you use them, if your internal compass is one that is wholesome, is generally positive, we will be able to function. And today I have one or two little stories that support that. And then a discussion by Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, who was the Mir Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael and a great Musar thinker, as to what is the definition of machlokas. How do you know if a disagreement is a disagreement that's the right one? Or what should we do in disagreement? I felt that you would like this a lot. And how can we, who are often members of a community, who are not necessarily leaders, because the story of Korach is related to the leadership. It's the leader, okay? His cousin challenging the authority of the cousin. So, what can we learn from this? Because there's a lot of discussion among the people who look at this story and talk about what the leader is supposed to do. So, I want to ask the question, what are the grassroots people supposed to do? What are we supposed to do? We're not necessarily leaders. What are we supposed to do? How do we advocate? What lessons do we take from the story for ourselves? And what can we do with it? So I'd first just like to tell you a story about a person who Rav Gamliel actually brings it, Rav Gamliel HaKohen brings it in Shlach, but I thought it's just connected to our story. I think we should open up with the story, maybe close with the story. My thought is that we want to try to give people here in this discussion something to take to their Shabbos table if they choose to. So the story he tells is about a person who had a custom to give charity every day when he went to shul, And he had in his pocket, you know, talking about money and finance, he had 2 shekels. And 2 shekels buys his breakfast. And then people walk around with just a couple of pennies in their pocket. And he planned this day not to give the charity because he knew he needed the 2 shekels to buy his little lachmania, a little roll, and a drink. Comes to shul and is davening. His cell phone rings, he doesn't answer it. He doesn't answer his... He had forgotten to turn off his cell phone, but he doesn't answer it. He resists the temptation. Answer the cell phone. When he went into his pocket to shut the cell phone off, there was a... I'm just going to use you because you're close proximity, okay? It's not you and me. God forbid you're not a poor person. But he sees a poor person approaching for charity, and the poor person thinks he's going to his pocket to give him money. He knows he's going to put his hand in to shut off the cell phone. He didn't want to embarrass the man. So he gave him the 2 shekels. So I'm not going to embarrass him. He gave him his 2 shekels. After davening, when he went to look at the call that he missed, this is the call. It's his office mate. You know, I had left over rolls from the kids. I bought for the kids. I brought you one. I left it on your desk. So a person's intention makes such a tremendous difference. And the person who it happened to told it to the rabbi. He said, look, this is what happened. And the rabbi publishes this for all of us. That's really where all this is headed. That's the theme here. Where am I pointed? What is my intention? And the smarter people than us discuss what happened to Korach. What was going on over there? He was a smart person. He was a person who had intelligence. So what happened to him? So Reb Gamliel discusses the fact that the person's yetzer hara, a person's evil inclination, can make him think that night is day and day is night. So today, if we were listening to MSNBC, we would say, yes, there was a challenge to, it was nepotism. Because today we know that there's nepotism, right? Because Korach and Moshe were cousins. So in today's day and age, we can understand that the news would say, well, sure, there was a rebellion, because it's perceived nepotism. I lived in a city where there was nepotism. I lived in a city where you couldn't get a job in the public school unless on the door of the in the mailbox of the school board members there was left an envelope of cash.
Was this what?
Left an envelope of cash. One of the cities that I lived in. In the public school system. I tried to get the Jewish teachers to do it, they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it.
Smart.
Tried. Didn't work. Well, that was a joke for the tape. But the point is that we know that Moshe was appointed by God. We know that God told Moshe to appoint Aaron. So what possibly could have been Korach's thought process? How is it possible?
He was a very clever demagogue. Question: did he believe these various arguments that he uses? Or was it simply a ruse trying to appeal to the greatest number of people to resentment? Moshe remained there with Aaron. And he's expected to be accusing them really of making everything up, you know, making up the appointments, making up the mitzvahs on their own. It's a major assault, and it was probably one supporter was effective. But was that the reason, or did he just simply motivated by Gaiman? Was it simply just tricks he was using?
So that's what Gamliel really focuses on. how a person thinks of them, of themselves, of the gaiva. And he talks to leaders about not having haughtiness. But then he talks to all of us about realizing that the Yetzer Hara, we can be convinced to do, we can be convinced that night is day and day is night. And we have to be so careful to listen to ourselves and ask ourselves, why are we doing this? This, and if a person knows that they have a particular inclination towards going a certain way, so their job is to I'm going to say fight, and it's a lifelong fight. So when it's something that's physical, you know, sometimes our Yetzer Hara gets us to do physical things. Even in kosher food, right? Eating things we shouldn't eat. Let's say you have medical restrictions. So eat things you shouldn't eat, etc. So that's an example of a Yetzer Hara. I know it's not good for me to eat this donut. But I'm not thinking. That's what it means that the Yetzer Hara makes us think that day is night and night is day. Whereas the disciplined person thinks clearly. That's what it is. Why am I doing this? But that doesn't mean that we're supposed to be neurotic, but it means we're supposed to think clearly. This was a case of thinking clearly. Yes, you were not appointed to a position. Yes, Moshe and Aaron are related. Your fighting with them is a lack of clarity in your view, in your estimation. And we see that people sometimes drive themselves to places that they shouldn't be. And another person can see it so clearly. It's a matter of us seeing it. So, there's another powerful lesson, maybe already known to you, but it's certainly a good reminder that, you know, Korach's wife was an influence over here. And it's what I want to extend to it, it is not only the wives, it's the people in our lives. What influence do people have over us? The people in our lives. Do they give us good advice? Do they give us bad advice? I was called by a lady this week. What school should I send my child to? They call our office, and I get a lot of these calls. Lady, how am I supposed to tell you? I don't know you if I stumbled over you. What will be the best school for my child? I don't know your child. How am I supposed to tell you? And I sit there, I'm just not gonna tell you. You want me to describe the schools? Yes, I'll describe them. Go in and see how it feels to you. We get advice from people all the time. We live in a generation where people like to blame others for their advice. I'll blame Rabbi Kamenetsky, I'll blame my doctor, I'll blame this one, I'll blame that one. People go to Rabbi Kamenetsky all the time to blame him. A girl called him up 2 days for her wedding. She was having cold feet. So he said to her, you want me to tell you 2 days before the wedding to break it off? That's what she was looking for. No, Rabbi Kamenetsky don't break it off. Not me. So, the idea is, how do we get advice? How do we seek advice? Who do we listen to? It's that internal compass that perhaps the Torah is telling us to sharpen. There's a major lesson in every single parsha. And all the ideas are covered somehow in the Torah. So this week is to focus on us is how do we stay clear? We're not challenging the rabbi. We're not getting up tonight when the rabbi gets up to give his drasha. We're going to say, who are you? What are you doing? We're not going to do that. First of all, we're too courteous. Second of all, we're too nice. Third of all, we're not like Korach. We don't challenge the authority of anything or anybody. True?
That's because these 3 weeks, a long time, are bothering me. You know, you have the Masonim, the complainers, and then you have the
Meraglim.
And then you have this car. I just wondered, I saw one for the common foundation, which, you know, I think it's the same thing as what you're saying, but we all make mistakes. I mean, I'm going to be jealous, you know, of somebody getting maybe an aliyah and going, you know. Somebody, I'm going to be, we're all jealous. We all have sometimes tithes. We all have desires for honor. The problem is, the common foundation of the evil of all these 3 weeks is not what they thought, but they didn't go to Moshe Rabbeinu and say, listen, you're the God of joy. You're the greatest person that ever lived. I'm having these feelings. It looks like you're giving it to my brother. You know, it looks like Eretz Yisrael is scary. It's a question of minos. They just had bad minos. They went, they tried to incite the people, cause rebellion, revolution, and they didn't have good minos.
So what I think you're saying is, had Korach really been sincere, he would handle it privately. Right. There are ways to handle things privately. Yeah. A public display of the anger, etc., of the embarrassment, usually means that there's something wrong. And so the idea that Rabbi Gamliel is telling us is that the Yetzer Hara can make us think that day is night and night is day. And we all know people who just get themselves into such situations, and had they just thought first, what's happening? And it's a constant fight. It's a constant battle. It's a constant tug of war. We weren't made to be angels. We were made to be people who had distinct challenges and distinct abilities and distinct areas of our weakness. And our job over the lifetime is to say, okay, that's my Achilles heel. And I have to work hard to get it solved. That's my challenge. So, we're saying that it's the person themselves, who they have around them to help them with it, and do the people fuel the fire, or do the people make the fire lower? And can we be clear about what's happening? So, once a year, the government requires us to have an April 15th submission, reckoning. We go through all of our records. So, I think that this idea is saying you can't do it once a year. You do it all the time. You do it every day. Every day. What am I doing? Where am I going? Is the Yetzer Hara causing me to do things that I shouldn't do? Well, if so, well, I have to change the way. If you know, I like Dunkin' Donuts. There's a kosher Dunkin' Donuts on Avenue J, a few blocks away from where I work. You know, if I know that that's my Yetzer Hara, that I shouldn't go on to Avenue J. In other words, the rabbis say, "B'tachbulos the Yetzer Hara." But Rez has to think of ways to work around the Yetzer Hara. You know, you can't walk into Dunkin' Donuts and say, "Well, I'm just going to have coffee." Because that doesn't work for me. I have to know what works. So that's how a person is able to be successful. The Yetzer Hara, say, okay, what is the challenge and how am I going to overcome the challenge? And if a person thinks about that and is able to plan and program based on that, so the food analogy I gave is a very simple analogy. Things we know that are spiritual happen to us also. Let's say I sit next to people in shul who talk. Maybe I should move my seat. I'm not here to yell at them. How do I put myself in a situation where I'm going to be successful? I think that's part of what they're telling us.
Do you think there's ever a time? I mean, the rabbi said that this is the only pure, Machlokas, which was one that was purely right. There's always. But do you think there's ever a time that? I mean, we should all avoid Machlokas, but is there ever a time when it's correct? I mean, if something bad is going on in the shul, I mean, the only way to fight it is to have some.
Okay.
We have good meals, but.
Okay, so in answer to your question, I think we have to have the sterling character. In a shul that is not to be named in this community, I was in the room, the rabbi was speaking, and somebody got upset at the rabbi and publicly disgraced the rabbi. I was in the room. It was a pouring night. It was a pouring Friday night, just like this. Actually, the rain was worse. And at that time, is quiet. One person went over to the president and said, this shouldn't be allowed to continue. We can't allow public disgrace of the rabbi. And so people do stand up, but they have to stand up quietly. And they have to know how to stand up and do things that are intelligent. Not just fuel to the fire. Don't just get emotional, right? He's acting bad, so I'm going to act bad. And I guess if we plan for it, when we need it, we'll be able to use it. That's what all these stories do. It helps us plan so that if we ever need it, we can call upon that resource. Your question is a very good one. But just to talk about this idea about how do you know whether an argument, in Hebrew the words are L'shem Shamayim, how do you know if an argument is proper or is not proper? A fight. How do you know? So, the Mishnah in Avos says, wrote by Rav Shmulevitz, that an argument, a disagreement, that is L'shem Shamayim, which is really for the sake of heaven, so that argument will have some fulfillment. And an argument that does not have the element of being really for the sake of Hashem will not have fulfillment. And the Mishnah continues to give an example. What's an example of an argument that is not going to have, that is not L'shem Shamayim? I'm sorry, that is L'shem Shamayim? When Hillel and Shammai argue. Two people in the Talmud, what's the rule? Is it this rule or that rule? So that argument will have a fruition. It will have a longevity. And what about an argument that is not going to have a fruition or longevity? So that's the argument of Korach. We're just going to wait for Jeff for a second because he's going to get me water. If I know him well enough. He sees me coughing. He sees that I'm... So we're gonna wait for him. Okay. Jeff, we waited. We stopped. We waited because we had a hunch that you were responding to my cough. Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you. Just what the pharmacist ordered. Now, he goes further and he explains something. How do you know if an argument is appropriate? So the Rambam gives an explanation. It depends on what your goal in arguing is. If your argument, because you want to show that the other guy is wrong, that's an argument that's not going to work. That shows that you're not serious. But if your desire is to get the truth, then you will be able. You will be able to have some part in this machlokas. And that may be part of the answer to your question. If there's a situation and you're looking to get to the truth, to the root of the truth, not you're looking to get back at somebody who doesn't agree with you. Husband and wives have this very often. Are they arguing because they want to get back at each other or because they want to look for the common truth? So if you look for the common truth and you work together to get the common truth, even if it's about emotional points which are delicate and sore, you'll be able to solve it. But if your only goal is to get back at the other person, then you will not have any success. And that's what the Rambam here is teaching us. And that means listening to the other person, that means hearing them out, and not countering them as human beings, but countering them for the arguments. And because a person really seeks the truth will say, yes, you're right. I didn't see that. I didn't know that.
So if you're looking for a win-win situation, because the problem is that if you're a Korach, you walked up to him and somebody walked in and said, well, What are you doing this shemshim? Of course I'm doing shemshim. Of course I'm not. This is my wonderful cousin, but the problem is, you know, there's something called nepotism, and he's lost his subjectivity, and I know in my own life it's happened too, where I really thought I was doing something shemesh right now, and later on, the paper said, I'm not angry, you know. And later on, I realized I was angry, and I was foolish, but when you're in the heat of the fire, you don't even know it. That's
the I was standing in the doorway of a shul, yeah, I'm not going to tell you where, and I was trampled over. Okay. Now, I'm not a toothpick. It takes something to tremble over me. I wasn't knocked down or anything. The person, it's like they didn't see me. And they were running to get to shul. If you're running to get to shul, and you knock somebody down, that is in the way. It's a famous story with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter around Rosh Hashanah time. Someone said to another fellow on the street, can you tell me what time it is? So he said, you know, I'm so busy thinking about this time, about Rosh Hashanah, and etc. I just can't even look at my watch. So Rabbi Yisrael said, no. You want to be involved in thinking about Rosh Hashanah and God? Wonderful. Not on somebody else's cheshbon. Not when it affects somebody else. Somebody asks you for the time, you have to say, it's what time it is. I'll tell you a fascinating shaila that Rav Zilberstein even brings. Rav Zilberstein, who we quote often, he brings the shaila. Is a Jewish storekeeper allowed not to let people use his washroom? You ever see a sign on the store that says, for customers only? Or a lot of stores you go in, they say that they don't have a washroom, and they're lying. So he brings the shaila. It's costing the money, right? Maybe it's only pennies, maybe it's only a little bit, but it's costing money. Are you allowed to refuse somebody? You're a storekeeper, and you have a washroom. Are you allowed to refuse somebody to use the washroom? Not because you're causing a person pain to go to the bathroom. Is it right? Are you allowed to do that? You have it. If you have it, that means maybe you have to share it. So this idea about how we view ourselves, how we view others, and how do we look at shalom. So this concept of shalom, I just wanted to just insert this here as we wind down. Chazal say that shalom is so great that even if the Jewish people would, so to speak, serve avodah zarah, they would serve idols, okay? But there's peace between them. They're sinning. One of the cardinal sins, serving idols. But they're united. They're a united community. I don't mean like, you know, like an occult or something like that. I don't mean that. A cult is also united. Okay? And they're sinning and they're doing all types of weird things. But if there's shalom between the people, so Hashem says, Yitzhar can't get them. The Satan can't get them. Because they're looking for the shalom. So, I was thinking about the fact that we, often in our lives, we have the ability to promote shalom. Sometimes it's by our action, sometimes by our inaction. And a person who pursues that is worthy of merit. So all in all, the story of Korach is a painful one. It's a difficult one. And we certainly didn't want Korach to have any problems. We're not looking to see the earth open up and have a miraculous force that establishes what the truth is. But the lesson to all of us is in our personal lives, in our communal lives, A, to be careful not to let the Yetzer Hara convince us that day and night is day. The things that are right, the things that are wrong are wrong. And seeing that lens of truth. And the second idea is to understand that if my purpose in arguing with you, arguing with this situation, is to prove you wrong, then that is not the integrity of peace. But if the point is that I want to get to the truth, That is a machlokas. That's a disagreement that can have some lasting influence. And we'll close with the following story. It's from Rav Zilberstein. He brings it in this week's Parsha. It's a fascinating story, which just kind of drives the point home to me. Anyway, so let me just get it over here. Left the marker in here. And it happens to be specifically about a rabbi. We know that in Europe there was a great man whose name was Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. He was actually killed in the Holocaust. And he was one of the great rabbis of the previous generation. And he had a yeshiva. And he actually opened up his yeshiva in a town. And in this town, there was a rabbi who was a big Talmud Chacham. But he saw that the people in the town, they started to come to him with their issues and questions and problems as opposed to the rabbi. He picked up and he moved the yeshiva to another town. He wouldn't climb to heaven on the heels of somebody else. He said, if you're coming to me, it means you're not going to the rabbi. You have a rabbi. I'm here and my yeshiva's here. But the point is not for you to circumvent or go around your rabbi. So just like we had the story of Korach and we had the story of, you know, people who are perhaps not using the right lens, here you see that our great leaders were careful to keep their place. Now maybe Rabbi Chanan Wasserman was a big Talmud Chacham. He could have said, well, you know, I'm a big Talmud Chacham, and maybe these are serious issues. He said, no. I'm not going to even stay here for another 5 minutes. If you are working around the rabbi, then I'm not going to be here. So imagine the clarity, the integrity, the honesty. And Rabbi Chanan Wasserman was probably greater than the rabbi in terms of being a scholar. But he said, I'm not going to do anything that's going to affect this man's position. Rabbi Levine's father, Rabbi Levine told me that his father was actually hired to give a class at Yeshiva University many years ago. And he was giving a class, he had given it a few days, and the man who used to give the class came into the room. And when he said, oh, was this your position? He said, yes, it was. He resigned. And in those days in America, it was probably hard to find a job. And working for Yeshiva University was a very prestigious type of a job. It's not like rabbis had opportunities to make money. But he would not do anything that affected somebody else. Oh, this is your job? Well, I'm just going to step away. So that's the balance. That's the opposite. You have the Korach on one hand, and you have these other people who found a way to really have the compass face true north.